B-Pod Studios.
So that. Thanks for starting your day with Toucher and Rich.
Why are you doing this to me?
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
Lord of the mercy. All night Sunday, Central. Follow me now. Say hi, Dick, yes, you're rolling hip-hop. Say J-Roll, yes, you're rolling hip-hop. Redefinition, say you're rolling hip-hop. Say Black Soul, come to Rocket Yacht. From the first to the last of it, delivery is passionate. The whole
98.5 The Sports. We are Toucher and Rich.
Hub.
What did I say?
No, it's 98.5 The Sports.
Hub. I'm reading stuff and trying to get two things going at once. This has been a long week.
It has.
I apologize. 98.5 The Sports. Hub. Toucher and Rich. No, Rich. You have information about the David Ortiz case.
So it seems every day there is a whole new layer of this David Ortiz story that's come out. First of all, there is a new video that was released from a different angle and also outside the club of how the shooting went down in the Dominican Republic. You can see a guy come up on a motorcycle and there are two cars that end up meeting with the guy. And then eventually he ends up walking into the bar and it's a clearer shot. And he just, so the way the club is set up, Fred, and he couldn't tell it from the first video, is that it's like a patio, but the edge of the patio is onto a sidewalk that overlooks the street. So this guy just comes walking down the sidewalk outside of this restaurant, and David Ortiz is right next to the sidewalk. Like, he is right where the edge of the patio is. And this dude walks right up to him and shoots him, and everyone runs off. And then, of course, you see the chaos that happened afterwards, the motorcycle takeoff, and everything that happened afterwards. Now, so far, 9 people have been arrested in all of this. And right now, there is an investigation as to whether or not the plot to kill David Ortiz was hatched by 2 people who are already behind bars. As police in the United States disclosed some of the criminal histories in Pennsylvania and New Jersey between these 2 guys who are part of this huge gang called the Gilberts. And that's who they're saying is behind the $8,000 payment to kill him. And if you look at the
Gilbert Godfrey, by the way, Kingpin.
They're a very loud gang.
they speak with no
change in tone
at
whatsoever.
At one point, big insurance guys. But the Gilberts?
Yeah, the Gilberts. And
against the Melvins and the Hildegards?
Right.
Very intimidating.
Judge Hahn's like, oh, that sounds like a group I would be affiliated with.
Yeah, somewhere there's a certain New England Patriot named Slater saying, that's the Gilberts.
And all these guys have nicknames. As a matter of fact,
call me the chemist.
There is Sandy, who is the alleged shooter.
Just like Grease.
Squiddy. You've got
just like Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, there's one gentleman by the name of Eddie Vladimir Feliz Garcia, aka the Package.
That's not bad.
The Package.
You can call that's not bad.
Yeah, that's what you know, your porn name.
Someone who goes by the name of the Kid. Then there's a gentleman by the name of the Surgeon, and then somebody who goes by a name which is fairly racial, so I'm not going to say it. I don't quite know what we can and cannot say.
There's someone named the
White
Whelan too.
What's that?
The Venezuelan, right? There's the surgeon and the Venezuelan. Those are the 2 I know.
Yeah, the racist one is the white guy.
Ah. Right, there's just a white dude. But then there was this story. And by the way, David Ortiz's daughter has come out, and she posted something on her social media saying, my dad hasn't complained once. He may be hungry. He's eating only ice right now, and he may be tired. But you know what he said not more than 3 minutes ago? Even toothpaste tastes good here. Said, I hope to share a bit of optimism in times like this. So that's obviously good news. But then the Daily Mail, who was the one who released the story right along with the paper that was in the Dominican Republic, that this might have all been a plot to get revenge for David Ortiz having an alleged affair with the girlfriend of a known drug lord. So the Daily Mail comes out with this. The woman believed to be at the center of the David Ortiz shooting riddle can today be revealed
as B. Arthur.
He had a thing for the Golden Girls. Curvy Dominican model who flocked to the slugger's side as he fought for his life in the hospital. The Daily Mail has identified Maria Yarabel Martinez Garcia as the female clashing with Big Poppy's entourage in a waiting room hours after the failed $8,000 hit in the Dominican Republic. A video of the incident circulating on social media shows the busty YouTube beauty vlogger arguing with several other women before being thrown to the floor amid the chaotic scenes. I've seen this video, and this is allegedly right outside of the hospital room that David Ortiz was being treated in the Dominican Republic, and this woman comes in and starts screaming at whoever is David Ortiz's entourage, and there's a fight, and this woman gets thrown to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The young mom has not been spotted since, though someone claiming to be Garcia gave a brief interview to a Dominican TV station in which she denied any romantic involvement with David Ortiz.
When she fell, was there a Tootsie situation?
I don't know why Damon Amendolara is here. We are friends, she said. He knows my family, and people are making things much larger. His recuperation is what's important right now, not me, not the people in the clinic. Well, then why was there the fight if you were just a friend? Ortiz is back in the United States, and they go into that. And then they go in to say that there was some incidents that happened within the 24 hours preceding all of this that could have led to the violence. They say that a gang of sicarios ended up stalking him. They say it was $7,800. And then right here, let's see. Okay, here it is. Documents include a June 8th sales agreement for a Lexus that lists Garcia as the owner of the new car. The media appears to allege that Ortiz bought Garcia a luxury SUV the day before the shooting. And they have also in the paper a bank check that was made out by David Americo Ortiz Arias, which is his full name. And it shows of a Bank of America check to Lexus for $84,000. The memo on the check is translated to read the vehicle purchase. The check was dated the day Ortiz was shot. And then they also were able to find the Lexus title in which it was in her name. And they also posted the check as well, which is signed by David Ortiz. They approached the dealership to verify whether or not the papers were genuine. A saleswoman said she was not able to speak to the media because of an ongoing investigation. Now, Garcia has not been named as a suspect nor a person of interest, and there's no suggestion that she was in on the murder plot, but that adds another layer to all of this. And it seems like a lot of the media is not reporting this in the Daily Mail, and I think the New York Post had something to do with the relationship between him and this drug lord's girlfriend. But now you've got pictures of the check, you've got the
pictures of the feet.
I don't know if there's pictures of the feet, but you've got the Lexus deed. And this video, which is absolutely nuts, she comes into what looks like the hotel room or the hospital room or right outside of it. And there's about seven or eight people who are there waiting outside of Ortiz's room, and they get in a fight. They throw her to the ground. So this is going to end very strangely. And hopefully it obviously ends with David Ortiz being all right. But who is the woman that they are? Because I haven't seen anything more, but they said one woman was arrested, but I didn't see her in the pictures. What does she have to do with any of this?
I don't know.
She's a member of one of the gangs?
I think she's a member of one of the gangs, one of the controlling members of one of the gangs. That's what I was reading. But again, everything is fluid. Today's story about what she represents to the gang could be completely changed by tomorrow. I mean, the Mirror, for as good as their reporting is, has been known to be wrong on occasion. So I don't know.
So the father of the shooter told a television station down there that he had severed relations with his son after he was tied to a home used by the gang led by Junior Manaya German, who is known as Gilbert. And that was where the name comes from. Gilbert was fatally shot by police in 2013, according to the media.
What's eating Gilbert?
Well, I don't know if they ate him, but he died.
No, what's eating him?
I'm not quite sure.
What's eating Gilbert Grape?
Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah.
I wonder what was eating him.
Leonardo and a fairly large woman, I think, was in it, too.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Johnny Depp, too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, big fatso.
Johnny Depp in his Benny and June years.
Right.
Benny and June, not a good movie. But Eating Gilbert Grape was weird enough to be good. But that was all right.
Yeah.
Impossible to get through. So the Gilbert gang, one of the most poorly named gangs. I mean, these be the Cobras. I mean, come on. The Gilberts? I don't know. It all seems very, very strange what's going on there. But so you're saying people in the United States are involved?
Yep. As a matter of fact, the two people who they're saying might have been the masterminds behind all of that are already in prison. And one guy was in prison for, oh, geez, I need to find out. There's so much information. There's like nine different people doing nine different things. They all have nicknames. Why was the mastermind in prison? I forgot what it was. Was it
it was attempted murder?
Yeah, I think it was attempted murder for someone in Pennsylvania. So they have now been taken out. They're being questioned in all of this. So we should get some more information fairly soon on everyone. I mean, they're all in prison. They're all in court yesterday. I know, or at least most of them were in court yesterday, being asked about all the information. So we'll see.
All right. Well, it's an ongoing story. Joe Haggerty has not been on the show for a while. But he is, it's time for the offseason, puka shell necklaces and all. He will join us. He will talk about the Bruins offseason and how all these matters of salary cap will be taken care of. We will talk to him in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Get the app. Get the Sports Hub. Get Toucher and Rich. Down. Download the Sports Hub app today.
Yo.
Held in by Krug, fires, and this one sails off a leg into the far corner. The Blues on it with nine. Rinderon to the near side. No icing here. The St. Louis Blues, for the first time in franchise history, 51 seasons, have won the Stanley Cup. Your final here in seven games of the Stanley Cup Final. Blues 4, Bruins 1. They win the series 4-3, and they will hoist Lord Stanley in 2019.
Yo, check. Look. Tickety check it, brought the soul back to the home team. Motown, why can't you see my team is supreme? Diana, welcome to the solar system of the forces. You running in a circle, we just chewing on your orbit.
Forfeit, fork it over. Heimlich maneuver, me and my ass make the cut like we you had your boots up.
98.5 the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich, of course. Joe Haggerty not answering the phone.
Oh, come on, Joe. Get this all lined up, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Oh. And he's got a little kid. I mean, I don't understand really what the deal is, but I'm reading Fluto Shinzawa in The Athletic, and the Backus has to be removed. It has to be removed from this roster. There's no question about it, especially with the signings that are coming up.
I checked his no-trade clause, and he does. He has a no-movement clause each of the for the last 2 years, but apparently it's modified.
Yeah.
Apparently there's a list of 8 teams this next year and 15 teams the final year of his contract.
And he's going to want to go where he's going to play. I mean, I think that. So Jimmy Hayes is the last guy the Bruins bought out. But Backus is due $4 million in signing bonuses, and he's due $1 million base salary next year and $3 million the following year. If the Bruins bought out Backus, they would have to apply over $10 million towards the number over the next 4 years. They would carry over $5 million in idle dough next year, over $3 million the following year, and then $600,000. And then $600,000. Oh, boy, that was a bad contract. And so they can't do that. They can't buy him out. As much as I said it yesterday, they...
No, you get nothing back if you do that. No, I mean, you screw yourself. Well, I think that you get... I think, what did he say? I'm just over $1 million in relief? That's it.
Yeah. Then there's... if he retires, he's not gonna. At 35...
No, why would you retire when you got that kind of money sitting in front of you?
Well, pride. I mean, he's made $35 million, and he sucks now. But, I mean...
he's playing.
I mean, but wouldn't you just be like, I'm so terrible?
Nope. Not if you got that kind of money in front
of
you.
Nope. If I got $12 million sitting in front of me, I got $12 million sitting in front of
me. Right. I mean, just a little less than, like, that's like almost 50% of what he's made. I mean, you're making a ton more money.
Yeah. He's not 40. I mean, he can still play.
He's going to be 36.
Yeah.
We can't play.
Well... in his mind, I'm sure he can. He said, I just played however many playoff games. I certainly helped against Toronto. I could certainly play for somebody.
Once again, I think that's in your head because I got it wrong. Columbus.
Did I say Toronto?
Yes, you did.
I meant Columbus simply because I was copying.
He's a star. Yeah. But they have to sign Heinen and the rest of those guys.
Krejci is going to be, I think, the most interesting thing.
Well, no, this is interesting because they have to do it. And so I'm continuing. He would have to part Cassidy or Sweeney with he would Anaheim, I guess, Buffalo, Calgary, Columbus. These are all teams that have the same kind of situation, but they would have to attach something big to it. He cannot go to Providence, and they could keep him. But they're going to have to move him. They're going to have to trade him, and they're going to have to attach a big name to it. They're going to, and if I'm a team taking on that awful, awful, terrible contract, I'm going to make you attach something very good to it, very, very good to it, because I'm just eating it. He's not going to play. I mean, Sweeney moved Bolesky to the Rangers, but that was in the Rick Nash trade. And they have to carry 50% of his salary. So not only are you going to have to move Backes and attach something to him, you're going to have to take on a good portion of his salary as well. So that's going to be a very, very difficult thing to do.
And it's all with an eye towards the next 5 years, because you have DeBrusk coming up after next season. You have McAvoy and Brandon Carlo, who are restricted free agents right now. And even to a smaller extent, Matt Grizzlick in the future, who's on the last year of his deal before he becomes a restricted free agent.
You would never retire, even if they said that you were going to be healthy.
I got $12 million coming my way.
I played a bunch of playoff games. Absolutely not.
Nope.
A bunch of playoff games.
Yes.
I played like half.
What I'm saying is in his mind, I was a useful forward for however many playoff games I played in.
Other than
they needed me out there.
Also, why would you do it? If somebody's going to give you $12 million.
Pride.
Oh, I mean, you'd be proud to make $12 million, I think.
I don't know. If I've had that career and I've made over $30 million, and they're saying, all right, you're so bad we can't move you, and you're never going to play. Just at a certain point, when does money become a secondary thing? All right, Joe Haggerty is so kind of us to join us 5 minutes late. Joe Haggerty from NBC Boston Sports. What's up?
What's up?
All right, what are they going to do with Backes?
Remains to be seen. It will be interesting. I mean, they could buy him out. I think it would be more advantageous for them to buy him out next year financially. But, like, you know, they've got to sign Carlo. They've got to sign McAvoy, obviously. So they're going to have to find the cap savings in there somewhere to do it. And, there comes a point, too, right, where David Backes, playing against his old team, Stanley Cup final, game 6 and game 7, he becomes a scratch and you don't play him in those games. That's it. That almost kind of, even though he's a team guy, unselfish guy, all of that stuff, that almost feels to me like a line that is tough to go back from after the fact. Like, you know, but that's one of those things where
disrespect, that's what you're trying to say, right? It's like you think he was disrespected.
He gets paid a lot of money to do what he does, so they can do whatever they want and what's best for the team, obviously, and it's a business and he understands that. But I'm just saying, for him, like, he goes through an entire year, just not having talked to him, but just thinking from his perspective, he goes through an entire year, does the right things, does whatever they ask him, is team first on everything. And then at the biggest moment, in the biggest spot, when he obviously wants to play, they're not calling his number. They go somewhere else. And I think that's a tough one to come back from. That's all I would say.
The only reason I think that it would be not as bad as you're painting it to be is they gave him a shot. Like, they gave him a shot against his team. It's not like he was scratched for the whole series and he didn't perform.
Well, no, it makes it worse. He did play against them, and then they scratched him for the last two games.
Yeah, I think they're like, hey, man, right, we gave you a shot, but it didn't work out.
It's for his pride. I mean, no, it's, come on. He wanted to play in those games.
It's the biggest game. It would have been the biggest game of his career, obviously, and the stakes were even higher against the team that he used to be the captain of. And, you know, I'm sure it's just human nature. It's going to go through your mind, you know, same thing's going to happen next year. If I go through everything, I do everything team first, I do all the right things, I'm a leader and I set an example, I do all this stuff. And then in the biggest game of the year, you're just going to go away and not play me and play somebody else that, you know, played 11 games during the regular season. Like, I understand what you're saying, Rich, and I think you're right. It obviously turned out to be the right move in game 6 when Coleman scored a goal. debatable if it was the game right move in Game 7 because Coleman really didn't do much. But, you know, he had petered out as far as his game went. And that's what happened in the playoffs. You know, he would – every time he would play a few games in a row, you would see the skating juice start to leave his legs, and he was having a hard time keeping up, and he wasn't as much of a factor. And then when he sat and didn't play for a few days – and you could put him back in the lineup then his skating link seemed to be much better. He seemed to make more of an impact. He injected life into both the Toronto and the Columbus series when he came in. He just couldn't sustain it anymore at 35 years old.
Okay, so Torrey Krug's going to be interesting because I think going into the playoffs, everyone was assuming that he was going to get traded so they could get something for him in this last year here. But, I mean, when you take a look at how he performed, it almost seems like they got to keep him for that final year. It's almost worth risking not getting anything back in order to just have him be with them while they've got this short window. Don't you believe that?
Yeah, I think it's an extremely tough call. Given the way he played in the playoffs, given how he was so strong two ways and battled against much bigger guys in the defensive zone when he had to and held his own in, you know, the series against Columbus, the series against St. Louis, what a big factor he was offensively for most of the playoffs. You know, the big minutes he was playing, everything. He was brilliant. I mean, the Bruins win, he's in the conversation for Conn Smythe along with a lot of other people. And I think that says something about the level he was playing at and his ability to elevate. And I also just love his attitude. I don't think he's afraid of anything, you know, and I think that's something that trickles down from him to other players. You know, I remember at times he's pushing and shoving with Colton Parayko in the scrums in front of the net, and he's 5'8". Parayko's 6'6", and he doesn't care. Like, he does that, and he's not afraid to get his nose in there in any situation. Threw a bunch of big hits, obviously had that huge hit on Robert Thomas in Game 1. So there's a lot that Torrey brings to the table, and that's a tough call, though, because he's obviously $5 million or so cap hit for next year, and then in free agency or when he gets to unrestricted free agency, he's going to make a ton of money the following year. You're probably not going to be able to sign him. You know, what do you do? Because you also need to free up that space, like we just talked about, to sign Carlo, to sign McAvoy. It would have been an easier call, I think, for the Bruins prior to this playoff run, but I think it makes it much more difficult. And Rich, to your point, if the Bruins want to compete, if they want to try to get back to where they were this season, next season, I think you do have to think long and hard about keeping him. But the other side of the coin is, like, they need to get bigger. There's no question about it up front. I've said it all year, and it was one of the fatal flaws at the end of the year with this team. They need to find bigger bodies to put on the wing, to fight through these big defensemen, to get to the front of the net, to get some of those rebounds that were there against Jordan Binnington. They need to break up that perfection line, which was not perfect at all in the Stanley Cup final. And they need to add size to Marchand and Bergeron and get somebody that can get to the front of the net. And the only way you're going to do that is by giving up something, too. You know, you may have to give up Torrey Krug in some kind of a trade to bring that commodity back to you to be a difference maker in other areas. And if you do that, you also then elevate Charlie McAvoy to the top power play unit, start asking him to do even more offensively, and you're also going to have to find somebody that can fill in, you know, along the way as well. But if you believe that Charlie McAvoy is on the verge of becoming a, you know, 10-goal, 50-point guy offensively and can quarterback that top power play unit, I think you do at least go through the exercise of thinking about trading Torrey Krug, because you need a big body up front, a dynamic scorer, a guy that can get to the front of the net. And I think you're going to need some salary cap relief to sign the guys that you want to sign.
Yeah, you came up with the term perfection line, right?
I did.
Yeah. Way to go, a-hole.
Hey, they looked pretty good until the end. Is it my fault they didn't live up to the name? I don't think so.
Actually, that's exactly who the blame lies with.
They were just out. The Bruins' best players were just outplayed in that St. Louis Blues series. I know people want to say it's a choke and that the Bruins, you know, were this big favorite and they choked at the end. And I don't believe that. They were beaten by a better team. There were individual players that I think were hurt and that didn't play anywhere near their level and got severely outplayed by their counterparts on the other side. And I think you can point to Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, and David Pastrnak as exhibit A, B, and C of that. Marchand did not rise to the occasion at all.
No, obviously, Marchand was
that
a liability.
Mistake in Game 7.
Yeah, he was a liability.
He didn't live up to the 100-point guy that he was during the regular season. Had that horrendous decision to make a change in Game 7 that led to the backbreaking goal. Bergeron, I think, was hurt and trying to do the best he could, but was really a non-factor through a lot of the games. And David Pastrnak was completely out to lunch for most of these playoffs. I don't think he was hurt. Everybody that I've talked to inside the organization said he was definitely not hurt, and it was not anything physical. So there was something going on with him. I don't know if he was rattled. I don't know what was going on. He whiffed on a ton of one-timers. He was afraid to shoot the puck. He was definitely getting discouraged by physical play from the other side. Like, he is going to have a lot to answer for next season and beyond, because I think he was exposed a bit in these playoffs, David Pastrnak, and he needs to respond to that. Otherwise, he's going to start getting that reputation that if you get up in his kitchen and you knock him around a little bit, he's going to shrink from it. And you don't want to get that in the NHL.
All right, Joe Haggerty, enjoy yourself this offseason. Are you going down there to the draft?
You know what, Fred? I don't know, and I really don't want to go, so I'm okay if they don't send me. Because I've traveled a crap ton in the last 2.5 months, and Vancouver's a goddamn haul. So I may be covering it from back here in Boston. We'll see.
All right. Well, you got to be there so you can just see the guys go up and hold the sweaters. All right.
Oh, yeah, that's very important. Yeah, I need to be there in person for that one, no doubt about it.
All right. Joe Haggerty, thank you so much.
See you, boys.
Is today the exit interviews? Is today the day where they clean out their lockers and you get the laundry list of injuries?
Could be.
I mean, today's the day.
I see yesterday we had the video of them breaking up the ice at the Garden. So I guess today would be exit interviews. Yeah. The NHL draft, by the way, is a week from today.
I know.
In Vancouver. My God.
By the way, Haggerty, so limited with his words. I mean, if he could only elaborate a little bit more with his answers.
It's like Pasta Joe, for God's sake.
I mean, come on. I mean, you know, follow through with your thoughts. All right, here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Brady won't throw me the ball because he has no trust in me.
Rich. I have a super dry tongue. Look.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
How's it going, everybody? Got a couple of thanks that I need to give out. I want to thank Toucher and Rich on WBCN. I want to thank David Lee Roth, a.k.a. David Ortiz. Before I came up here, I had a couple beers, no beers, chili. But one last time, recap them movies.
We are going to run.
Chili. Oh, those were the days. 98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Touch and Rich back at WBCN. We had something where if you mentioned the show during your graduation speech, you were a valedictorian and you could get up there and...
you get a prize.
Yeah, I don't remember. The prize might not have been much.
It probably wasn't much of anything at all. Maybe like a 75 cents off Hella Good Cheese dip.
Yeah, but...
but he got four of them. I think we had like 10 different things you could say.
Recap. Daddy Mouth.
No, that was Shack Attack.
Oh, yeah, that's
Daddy
right.
Mouth.
Okay. Sometimes I get him confused.
Yeah, so he did the ringer there, but this was the time of year where graduations have been happening all around the country. And did you guys have speeches at your thing?
I don't remember high school, but we had someone at college, and I don't remember who it was.
Okay, so we had at ours 4 valedictorians, like 4 people who tied, and each one of them had to make a speech. Oh. And it was an absolute beating.
Oh, my God.
And it's like at that point, you know, why do you need to make this huge, like, grand speech? I mean, you've already got into the college you want to get into. You're not doing this for any other reason other than to just say, hey, look at how awesome of a speech I can make.
And it's not like graduating high school is any, like, great shakes. Like, it's not difficult to do.
Well, if you're graduating, put it this way. If you're set to make a speech in front of your high school, play to your crowd. Don't sit there and talk, you know, like you're somebody who's writing a doctorate, which happened with everyone that's on there about, like, you know, honor, integrity. Like, play to your audience. Like, say stuff that's going to make them, like, laugh or like, you know, maybe inside jokes or something like that. But there was one valedictorian in San Diego at San Ysidro High School who is now one of my favorite people because she ended up obviously getting the best grades in the school, and she is in front of what looks like a massive class. Like, this is a football field, and all of the stands are filled on the side, and almost the entire field is filled with graduates. Like, it goes from the end zone to what looks like the 30-yard line on the opposite side. I mean, it is like 70 yards filled with people. And she goes up to go make her speech, and apparently she had turned in her speech to get reviewed to the staff beforehand, but in the middle of it, called an audible.
Nice. All right, here we go.
To my counselor, thanks for teaching me to fend for myself. You were always unavailable to my parents and I, despite appointments. Only in these past few weeks, with the award ceremonies and graduation coming up, did you begin making your appearance. And might I note, you expressed to me your joy in knowing that one of your students was valedictorian when you had absolutely no role in my achievements. To the staff...
This is the dream.
It is. Taking a flamethrower to the place.
Yeah.
She's just getting started.
This is out of a fantasy book.
And meanwhile, you can see the students who are kind of tuned out looking at each other like, hang on, what's she saying? And you can kind of see there's a tent that's got a lot of the staff, and they're like looking at each other and like throwing up their arms like, what's going on?
All right.
To the staff in the main office, thank you for teaching me how to be resourceful. Your negligence to inform me of several scholarships until the day before they were due potentially caused me to miss out on thousands of dollars. When applying for a work permit, you repeatedly turned me away, despite confirming with my employer and parents that all my paperwork was filled correctly. I've had to escalate issues with staff to an assistant principal various times to reach any sort of solution. To the teacher who was regularly intoxicated during class this year.
That teacher rules. Everyone cheers. They know who it is.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's like, all right, well, there's a reason they know who this person is.
No.
I mean, that is a Gronk spike. That is right in the middle of your valedictorian speech.
Is it a history professor?
To my teacher that was intoxicated throughout this year.
Because you got to figure, he also is a JV coach of some sport. So I'm wondering if it's got to be a history professor I was a history major. Because they dump like the idiots in the history department. And myself as a history major, so I'm taking a shot at myself.
Go back about 5 seconds if you don't mind.
Despite confirming with my employer and parents that all my paperwork was filled correctly, I've had to escalate issues with staff to an assistant principal various times to reach any sort of solution. To the teacher who was regularly intoxicated during class this year, thank you for using yourself as an example to teach students about the dangers of alcoholism. Being escorted by police out of school left a lasting impression. I hope that future students and staff learn from these examples. Thank you, class of 2019.
I mean, I just... having to be escorted by police off the school grounds.
Well, that's an alcohol-a-rooney.
Oh, my God.
Like, school only goes to, like, 3 o'clock.
We had a teacher that we always suspected was drinking, but we never actually saw it. But, I mean, really? The erratic behavior and the smell, I mean, there was almost no question.
Well, I saw it once in my school.
My friends.
Actually drinking?
No, I saw she was drunk out of her mind when she showed up that morning. I saw it.
My friend's dad was a teacher at school, and I never saw him like wasted, but there was always a little whiskey in the coffee cup.
Yeah. Our teacher would go, it was a science teacher, and I remember for the entire semester, it started off saying you had a project that was due at the end of the semester, and all we did was work on the project. And she would go into this back room and disappear. Like, we were taught nothing. They gave us an assignment. It had to be about physics. And they gave us 6 different things we could do it on, and we had the entire semester to work on it. We could take a hall pass. We could go out and do experiments. It was basically just you did nothing, and the entire semester the woman was in the back room.
Isn't that the job that you can understand drinking the most?
The school teacher?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Like, you probably go in with all these high hopes and... You know, you're going to, the kids,
you're going to make a difference.
Yeah. And you have this passion. You just realize how stupid and coddled these kids are.
Yes, Bird.
My seventh grade homeroom teacher, she was a drunk and we found nips on her desk. Legit, she would leave me and like two other kids would look and there's nips of vodka, Captain Morgan, etc.
Oh, really?
Empty in her desk?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she was bad.
Well, you shouldn't have gone through her desk.
See, the thing is,
violated her privacy.
In my school, drinking was like the worst, not even the worst of it, because we had three arrests while I was there of teacher-student relationships.
Yeah, you had a whole situation. There were guns in the basement.
Your school was
shooting range, people calling kids fatzos.
Yeah, we had a shooting range underneath the cafeteria.
Your best story, and I tell it all the time to people. I say it was me. No, I tell it all the time to people about your teacher going, "Sit down, fatso."
That was elementary school, too.
Well, it's funnier if it's high school.
I told you so. I'm like a bodybuilder now. And that's got to be the moment that everything changed.
Yeah.
You know, you get humiliated like that.
Like a real bodybuilder, like, let's cover up some pain, bodybuilder.
So we said we had an instructor in high school we called Six-Pack Jack because he was always at least a six-pack in.
If any job, I understand a high school teacher, not elementary school, I guess middle school kids suck too. But like,
middle school would be the worst for me.
Well,
everyone's trying to figure out who they are.
I'm friendly with some high school teachers, actually a lot of them. And nowadays, because kids, they have no adversity like growing up, any sense of, and this is no Generation X, this is true, and it's psychological studies have proven this. These kids have been so coddled that any like pressure, and especially at the end of the year, like any pressure, and they like break down. And when I say break down, fetal position on the ground, like happening all the time.
Jeez.
Because you know what people do now, and this is, again, read psych books, is that people intervene when there's ever any problem. Like your kid's girlfriend breaks up, then you go and like talk to her parents, or a kid's getting a disagreement on the playground, or a kid's getting a disagreement, and you settle that. So they're completely ill-equipped to deal with anything because everything has been taken care of. So any sign of like a problem in your way because I was talking to a shrink and he's like, you know, if your kid, like you almost want your kid to have to go through some crap so they get the tools to learn about it.
So he said, just because a teacher likes to have a Manhattan around lunch, no reason to escort him off the property by police. Ah, Nicholas.
Ah, Nick. I remember when you were... I actually have real info about... I got to be careful what I say about Mr. Gemelli, because I have actual information that he got off his chest. Oh, I had a crash pad in the North End. Nicholas, I can tell you this. Oh, I would say it was in Chicago, but I was really in the North End.
We got full phone lines.
Oh, man.
Apparently people can identify.
All right. Katie, you're a school teacher?
I am, and we have field day today, and then we have 2 days left, and it is so true. We are at the point of the year where a bottle of wine a day is not even cutting it anymore. There's not enough alcohol in the world to get through these next 2 days. It's just not.
Yeah, because I was talking to a teacher yesterday, and they were saying that, an elementary school teacher, and they were saying that they were dreading the rain yesterday because they're giving the kids three recesses to let them spaz out.
Yeah.
And they, with the rain, they were panicking. Like, what the hell are we going to do with these kids?
They start counting down, like, in early March. School days, like, okay, 52 left, 51 left, 50.
This is
elementary school. I've talked to elementary school teachers like you have. They, all of them do this.
Well, they don't all have to make it so obvious.
That's true, but that's pretty much universal.
Like, I understand, but, like, don't make it so obvious.
Yeah,
right.
Like, I mean, there's still school. Like, you know, when you get an itinerary of what's happening leading up to fifth grade graduation in January, like, you know, maybe don't like let us know. All right. Like, at least front like you're going to keep going.
Right.
All right. One more.
I don't know what that last word is in line five.
I don't either.
I bet it's coddled.
All right, go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, yeah. Jack, what's up?
Hey, guys. Listen, Fred's talking about kids being coddled, and I think kind of the elephant in the room anytime someone talks about that is, who are the parents who raised them and set those types of expectations? I mean, I think it's a little unfair to blame young kids for that kind of
thing. I didn't blame young kids at all.
No, he didn't, yeah.
I didn't at all. I said it's completely the parents' fault.
Yeah, but I
read the coddling of the American mind, and then go on and read books from there. I'm not smart enough to invent this stuff. This is psychological research. I'm not making it up. These are doctors. Okay. And in fact, I've talked to I'm fascinated by it now, and I've talked to a child psychiatrist about it, and they agree with everything I just said. They say it's good, good if your kids are young and they've reached some adversity. Now, not bullying where the whole school's on them and not getting, beat up.
No, but a test being taken and then the teacher afterwards not changing the grade for one reason or the other.
Not like the stuff I did. But, if a kid gets insulted on the playground or, any of these adversities, I mean, this is going to happen throughout the rest of your life. So you need to develop a toolbox to deal with these things. Listen, man, I don't know anything that's going on. I'm just going by what I read and who I talk to. Because, we're dealing, because I'm old. We got a break. Okay, we'll take it today.
We had some good calls, though.
All right.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.